Races with Steve Bick. Enough! Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
A very good Tuesday, race fans. Series 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964, if you're listening to Series XM online. And at the website as well, stevebick.com. A crisp, lovely early spring morning here in upstate New York. Hope it's equally nice wherever you are. And thank you, by the way, for the kind wishes and advice coming out the other side of the vaccination process. Feel better. It was like, you know, it's 24 hours. I think the first shot was more like a 36-hour knockout, but can't complain. Although the headache, I guess you get used to the headache, right? It's just sort of there. I've been taking, much like when I actually had COVID those 3 weeks, about every few hours, just taking the Tylenol, and it, you know, dissipates for a while, and then it comes back. The important thing was I did not keep Tina up last night. That's all that really matters, right? Got a handful of interesting news, including some very good news, and probably won't delve too far into yesterday's report that the equine injury database released. And, you know, this started back in 2009, Dr. Scalay, and it has it's really proven to be an important measuring stick for progress. And I think we all acknowledge that, you know, you can't, you know, it's obviously wishful thinking to think that you're going to get to zero. However, if you didn't see this, I retweeted the blood horse version of the press release, and Bill Finley wrote up a little more at TDN too, and Matt Hegarty has got a piece at DRF, so you'll find it. It's out there, and the most important part, and you know, before anybody says, well, there wasn't as much racing last year, that's not how it's measured by the total quantity. It's measured per 1,000 starts, so it doesn't, that part of it isn't important. You know, how many actual races were run last year? On a per 1,000 start basis, catastrophic injuries dropped to 1.41 per 1,000 starts. And that is a new low since they started keeping track of this. And a lot of this, of course, started and grew out of the bad winter at Aqueduct. And, you know, being aware of this, you know, statistically and keeping track started about then. In fact, Alan Foreman will join us tomorrow. And I'm trying to reach Dr. Parkin in, he's either in Scotland or in Britain. But when they started this process, there were two catastrophic injuries per 1,000 start. Now it's down to 1.41. And, you know, it, as we've explained before, we're not using these statistics as a marketing tool. It's not what it is. What it is a, you know, snapshot of, you know, a period in time, because these numbers are influenced by so many forces that it's very difficult And there's going to be spikes. I've tried to explain this a million times. You know, the elements impact it, and you know, there's just so many variables. But over 12 years, from 2 per thousand, 1.8 per thousand, then a little bit of a rise, 1.92, then 1.90, then 1.89. And then, starting in 2015, a very steady decline in catastrophic injuries per thousand starts, 1.62, 1.54, 1.61, 1.68. So you see, there is the ups and downs. Then 1.53 last year, 2019. And then 2020, 1.41. So, and then there's breakdowns, you know, between, you know, the categories by distance. And of course, you know, sprints are more dangerous. That's not a new phenomenon. And, you know, dirt, has the highest number, highest percentage behind than with turf and synthetic. Synthetic 1.02. And you know, these kind of reinforce a lot of the learning that, you know, continues. And, you know, for that group of individuals, you know, that's out there constantly attacking the industry. This should be, you know, this should be waived, you know, very enthusiastically that, you know, these numbers continue to decline. And it just, you know, with more and more knowledge and with more experience and, you know, with closer attention paid to the areas that we've learned are red flags. So we'll discuss it more with the, hopefully get Dr. Parkin in here. It's actually been a while. So I've been on once before and when he was happened to be in the U.S., but we'll get the leading epidemiologist on this topic. And we'll get Alan Forman. And of course, Alan spearheading the Mid-Atlantic plan that is contributing very successfully to, you know, these kinds of dwindling injuries. They should only dwindle. They should dwindle down to next to nothing. That's the goal, right? But this was very encouraging, and everybody, you don't become less attentive because things are going, you know, in the right direction. But everyone should be proud of contributing to, you know, to that. We're going to talk to Jessica Martini this morning in 10-15 minutes. We'll get a preview of tomorrow's sale. And normally I would be, you know, super enthusiastic. I'm certainly happy to get Jessica in here. But there was an incident yesterday that is just heartbreaking, and even more so because actually we're partners with the, you know, the consigner involved, and Dave Scanlon lost an American Pharoah colt yesterday in just a completely insane incident where the colt was working on the was getting ready to work on the turf course at Gulfstream and was spooked by the tire tracks across the turf course, bolted, dropped his rider, smashed through the fence, and fell gravely injured into the lake and died. And Dave Scanlon, the two-year-olds that we've acquired for our group the last 2 years, both come from Dave. Bolterine, who's about to drop her Motown baby. I don't even know what it is. She's about to, she's due any day. In fact, she's a few days overdue. Scherzando, who is going to run a week from Sunday, get on the turf. So we've gotten, I knew Dave Scanlon before this, but, and everybody down at the sale was just, horrified and just saddened by this incident yesterday. So for Dave and the partners that were involved in the pinhooking and development of this very nice colt, from every indication. Yeah. So that certainly put a damper yesterday on the proceedings. We'll talk to Jessica, though, about what went on and the highlights. Certainly there was also, another tricky aspect of yesterday's Breeze show, the breezing. And by that, I mean the wind. The wind got to be really tough. And, the more, the later that the sets were going. So, the times for those that strictly look at the eighths and use that somehow as a measuring stick, it's not, you gotta dig a little deeper than that in this case. So we'll talk to Jess in about 10 minutes, and we'll get her take on the lineup that'll sell tomorrow. And 2 o'clock, by the way, is the start. They've kind of bounced that start time around. There's been occasions when it's, one year was at night. It was really kind of fun, actually. Might have started like at 4 or 5. Remember that? Was that? That's maybe 2 years ago? 3 years ago? I've been down there, two of like the last 4 years. And it's a high energy environment. It's a boutique sale. Coincidentally, the April OBS catalogs, yeah, they're two thick books. For OBS, which is what, 3 weeks away, essentially, and that's that'll be the big follow up to tomorrow. So we'll talk to Jess. A few other things, and how about a quick racing note? Because yesterday, as we were getting off the air, I mentioned that Mahoning Valley was having a force out, and I was in no shape to dig through it. But for those that did, and there was some serious play, 1.7 million ended up. I think it started at 350,000, 370, something like that. So there was a good $3.4 million bet into that force out yesterday in Mahoning. And there's a key learning. It seems to be consistent. This was a sequence with one favorite, 2 second choices, and 3 third choices. And prices of $5, $6.60, $11.20, $6.60, $15.20, and $10.80. So there were no crazy prices. There was a DQ, which would have taken this thing probably would have doubled the return. Bel Tempo, who was 9-2, got taken down in the sixth. And Backsplash, who was the second choice, got put up. So that this might have actually paid $7,500, essentially $7,448 for that sequence. The parlay, the win parlay, was $1,250. I mean, this was a crazy value. And I texted back and forth with Ed because I figured Ed played it, And we agreed. The more favorites, even if you end up with a favorite and 5 second choices, the thing is going to disproportionately pay just because beaten favorites, you know, just provide exponential, you know, power to the returns. I mean, this was crazy, just crazy for a thing to pay essentially, what, six times the Marlin. It's crazy. And there was nobody, you know, there were a couple of oddities in the morning line, you know, that were inflated. And maybe there's a lesson in there too. I don't know. That's probably worth discussing. Yeah, it's one of the reasons people get frustrated when morning lines are out of whack. You know, for instance, in the third leg, you had the third choice win, Magic Credit, pays 11.20, but was 15-1, the morning line. You know, was the sixth choice on the morning line, but goes off as the third choice. You know, so that, you know, that when people are looking and they're making determinations, they do, maybe you're better off. You know, I personally always print PPs early, and you might be better off. I mentioned, well, the morning line came out and I'm a little surprised. Maybe you're better off, you know, just make your own line and not even worry, and don't be influenced in that regard and say, well, that horse is 15-1. You can't. Maybe that's your. I'll ask Andy that. Actually, that's a great. I think that's a topic we don't really delve into all that often. But no, I wanted to slip this in because I was stunned at when I went and looked first thing this morning. So when I said, "How'd that Mahoning Valley come out?" So, and just looking, actually, 7,500. So you had a lot of winners, which is good. That's the best. And that's a nice, you know, 7,500. That's a nice hit on a, you know, let me see. So you had 1.7, and who knows if it was, I'm not sure what they take out of it, but it was 1.3. So 15%, maybe 130,000, 200,000. So that takes it a little under 1.5. So 200 winning tickets. That's cool. Nice. Very nice. All right. A couple other things. We had hoped to connect with Tony Alivato. I think we're going to have to wait till tomorrow for Tony. I was hoping for him today, but I just heard from Pat McKenna. So we're looking, I got to talk to Tony about, and I really should reach for Mike Mulvihill too from Fox, because this deal with Fox and Naira is important. You know, it speaks to, you know, what is obviously going on in the, you know, the sports betting landscape, and the, you know, the acquisition and the marketing alliance potentials, you know, that exist. And I'm sure that, you know, this is, you know, this will be more the order of the day long term. So I wanted Tony to, you know, talk about that, you know, and with Fox taking a stake in Naira Betts, and based on the reportage, there's potential for them to take, you know, even more. So we'll get to that. So the docket's filling up tomorrow. I mentioned Alan Foreman visiting. In addition, I did see, and Alan will detail it more himself tomorrow, there is going to be an abbreviated version of the match series in the Mid-Atlantic. And Alan will have those details when we talk to him tomorrow. So maybe, let's see. So I better not overbook for tomorrow, right? there's the story out of Arizona as well that I want to get to, and reached out to Mike Weiss. Of course, we know Mike from the his role in the University of Arizona and at RIITO. And he's been named the new general manager at Arizona Downs. They're going to try to, you know, get things, I don't know if you say established, reestablished, et cetera. But certainly Mike has the experience, and the things in Arizona have been obviously really strained and difficult. There's a lot of moving parts, so we're going to look forward to getting a visit in with Mike. And also, I'm hoping to get a visit in from Bill Gallo. I did not get a chance to mention on Friday that the steeplechase season got underway with point to point, and on Sunday. So it's steeplechase season time, and they've actually got some fun things going on. They're always trying to, you know, get some attention on the landscape. And so always happy to do that. We're going to get Jessica Martini in here. Okay, so let's do that. Todd Pletcher is going to join us on his way between Palm Beach Downs and Gulfstream. I'm sure he's headed down later to inspect the two-year-olds after yesterday's pre-show. So we'll talk to Todd and not only discuss the win by known agenda and the very clever handling that he authored with his latest Florida Derby winner. And we'll also get a little preview too of the horses that he's got running Saturday in the wood. And in addition, actually, Todd also, I don't know if we'll have time to do, you know, a usual survey, but he also won the Sir Shackleton with Basin. And there was also an allowance win that is notable because it was an optional claimer. Saif's performance Saturday at Gulfstream, 100 buyer, career best, and was in for 62.5 and got claimed by Mike Maker. Took him from Todd and Eclipse. And I would be willing, you got to be aware, this is a five-year-old, you know, Shadwell, obviously, and this could be a horse that in Maker's hands. I don't be surprised to see this horse going a mile and a half. This is a little different than some of those claims of Maker's, you know, where he takes a dirt router and turns him into a turf router. Because this is a turf horse through and through, and that has always been in his 16 race career. But you know, he typically has gone shorter, and then Todd successfully stretched him out in an allowance in February, and then again, you know, in this mile, and he was terrific on Saturday, but was being dangled, and Eccentric Club Racing Stable. Maker also took Blameless out of this race. I didn't even notice that Saturday when I printed the charts. So Yeah, the Maker Barn. That's their MO. They love scooping up, you know, these long-winded types. And here I am being long-winded when Jessica Martini is standing by. Jess, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. How you doing?
Excellent. And after we talked to Brian DiDonato after OBS, and now you and Christy swing into action for the meat of the two-year-old and training sales season.
Yeah, we're excited to get back to it. It's nice to be back in South Florida, I can tell you that.
Well, and just, you know, to be at the racetrack instead of having to cover these things remotely, that goes a long way, undoubtedly. And you know, a chance to talk to consigners and prospective owners and Boyd Browning and his team. So yesterday, some of the frustrations that can occur certainly during a breeze show, the winds over there, and that anybody that's been to Gulfstream can expect that. But how impactful was the wind as the breeze show went on?
I think it was very impactful. I think if you look at those horses who worked later in the day, if they had good time, then those are good horses, because the wind really, really picked up later in the day. It sort of progressed in the last two sets. It was really, there was a strong headwind. And it really dried out the track, too. So a lot of people were talking about it was almost a case of two breeze shows, and you have to look at those separately. But, of course, everyone always says, you know, the buyers know that, and they take allowances for that. So they know a horse worked later in the day, and they will take that into account when they're making their determinations as well.
Well, and one of the things that that we should make people aware, if they go to phasictipton.com and you look at the roster that's available at the sale, the breeze show, as opposed to horses going through the ring, they don't come through in numerical order. They come through in a, I don't even know how they determine the whether it's the barns or how they determine the order, but it's random the way horses breeze. So
consigners are given slots, and they then pick which horses of theirs they want to pick. So consignment you can pick if you want earlier or later. And of course, there's also the issue of the exercise rider. So you have to know where, you know, if you're sharing a rider with another consigner or what your rider is going to be doing. So they try and time that as well.
Interesting. And the fact that there was only one sub 10-second eighth, you know, kind of gives you an indication that whether the track was, you know, a little deeper and you know, a little slower than you might expect. Frankly, it's kind of funny that we think about OBS March, where you had quite a number of 9 and 4 breezes on the synthetic surface, which you don't necessarily think is going to give up those kinds of times. But talk
well,
a little bit.
This is a very different track, obviously.
Yeah.
Their 9 and 4s are not that big a deal at OBS, but at this track, they are a big deal. I think the sale here 2 years ago was the first time that they had a horse working under 10 seconds. So that 9 and 4 is kind of a big mark on this track.
Well, give us that was the 1, 9, and 4 we should mention. As a matter of fact, Kieran Dunn with a Nyquist colt out of Spinning Wheel. But give us a survey of what you made of the breeze show and who had tongues wagging.
It was consigners are talking about the quality of horses on the ground, and it's not just they're saying I have good horses on the ground. They're saying, I'm watching all these horses. They're all kind of centrally located in those sales barns and the tents on the backstretch. And they're saying, we're watching these horses, and we are impressed by the quality of horses that we're watching go by. So it was really exciting to see them out on the track. I guess practical joke is where we should start, because there's been so much buzz about him all winter. And obviously he had the topper at the OBS sale. And he's got 11 in the sale coming up tomorrow. Top line sales, which consigned the topper at OBS, has another one. They have a filly who worked in 10 and 2 yesterday. And SGV Thoroughbred Steve Venosa has a filly who worked late in the day and worked in 10 flat. So that's a very impressive time considering the track conditions.
run down some of the lineup. You know, this is a boutique-y sale. This is not a wholesaler event, and this is a seven-figure event and high six-figure type of a sale. And so, from that standpoint, there's going to be a pretty good roster of top shelf stallion.
Sure, I think this is the top of the market for sure. I think there are maybe six intimates just in the sale, and obviously you can't go wrong with an intimate if it's at this point. And Eddie Woods has a filly who worked in 10-1 who looked really nice. Curlin obviously had the Florida Derby winner, and Niall Brennan is offering a half to Kentucky Derby winner Always Dreaming, who's by Curlin, and she worked in 10-1 yesterday. I guess also I would mention the Arrogate filly worked the fastest quarter mile for Tom McCoughlin. She went 21-1. And actually McCoughlin also had a Gunrunner filly that worked in the fifth set, so towards the end of the day, and she worked a quarter in 21-4. And I thought that was a very impressive work for that filly.
Just looking at the roster in stallion order, and you mentioned the Arrogate. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. There's eight Arrogates before the outs, and this is to paraphrase the Glennie Kane Oakford standard. They won't be making more of these. How Glennie would say that, it would always make me kind of, I shouldn't laugh, but it would always make me smile. They won't be making any more.
It's true. You can't argue with that logic.
Exactly. How dear do you think the Arrogates are going to be held in terms of prospects? I mean, we talked about American Pharoah, and I'm sure the Justify storyline will be similar about collector's item concept. That's certainly going to be the case with Arrogates.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And consigners that I've spoken to have been really pleased with the Arrogates that they have. They're really pretty large horses. Actually, it was funny. Tom McCoughlin said this filly that had the bullet yesterday at the quarter mile, she's out of a flatter mare, and he said she was a little smaller than you would expect for an Arrogate filly. So I don't know if that helps her. Obviously, these are going to be probably later developing horses, so you wouldn't expect them to come out breezing really fast at these sales.
In addition, I'll go through, I guess, alphabetically. Looks like there's nine Curlins and there's actually two of them have come out, so make it seven. Ghost Zapper, and you mentioned Gunrunner, and you would think that these first sets of 2-year-olds are going to be well received.
Sure thing. And obviously Liam's Map had a big day on Saturday.
Yes.
Here, so Eddie Woods has his, I think there's only one, and Eddie Woods has a filly by that sire working 10 and flat.
Oh, in fact, I see that. The other two, one was, the other, there were two others that, but they came out of the sale. Three of the four Lord Nelsons came out as well. McLean's Music, three Mohaman, make it two, Malibu Moon, Nyquist with a quite a representation. Boy, you mentioned the Practical Jokes, Jessica, and. There's more. It looks like there's more Practical Jokes than anything else.
I counted 11. So
yeah.
I mean, he's just been the hyped up horse of the winter. So it's very exciting to finally see them go through the ring and see what they can do when they finally get to the racetrack.
Boy, and here's the Uncle Mo's, and only three of the original six are going to come under gavel. There's four tappets.
And one of those is, one of the Uncle Mo's is a full brother to Dream Tree. So it's the Waver Tree is selling that one as well. And Waver Tree sold Dream Tree here, I think, for $750,000 a few years ago. So they're hoping to have more success with that family.
Four Quality Roads. And actually the mention of Quality Road makes me think to bring up with you as well. I I told everybody at the beginning of the show, Jess, about the unfortunate situation with Dave Scanlon and the American Pharoah Colt yesterday that happened to come from the family of Quality Road and was expected to sell well.
Yeah, it was just an absolutely freak accident, something you could never plan for. I don't know that anyone could have seen that coming. It was hard to watch, and obviously sympathies to Dave Scanlon and everyone involved with the filly.
Yeah, very much. There's so many ways around this sport, you know, to have your heart broken and to be just crushed. It's like the normal ways aren't enough. We got to find new ways.
We're finding new ways. Yeah,
it's unbelievable.
We should stop doing this now.
That's unbelievable. Yeah. Well, in terms of the buyer bench, talk a little bit about expectations on that front.
It seemed like everyone who was anyone was at the Breeze Show yesterday. They said that the suites upstairs in the track were packed with people enjoying the air conditioning and lots of people outside too. Sort of all the regular faces you would see there. Representing all the major buyers, so there just seemed to be a really positive, upbeat mood in the track. You know, it was just like everyone's just excited to be out and hoping to return to normalcy and just excited. So I think that bodes really well for this sale.
Excellent, and the marketplace at OBS certainly, you know, gave a. You would think some hints that the market is solid and then some. I mean, we already knew that the top end does well no matter what the sale, but it did seem like the numbers pressed a little further down the chart than as much as you would hope anyway.
Yeah, there definitely seemed to be a stronger middle market than we've seen in recent times. And I think people almost seem surprised by how strong the market was at OBS. And that's obviously a good sign. And as you said, this is the top of the market here at this sale. So that's always been strong. And so you'd really definitely expect to see that continue. I know that the Japanese buyers were really active at OBS, a lot of them taking advantage of the new internet bidding, which has just become something that you've got to do in the age of the pandemic. So I think, you know, to have those foreign buyers, even if they're not able to get here, being able to bid on horses and mix that with the domestic buyers who are here and a lot of the foreign buyers who are able to get here, I think it's going to be a great sale.
Yeah, always intriguing, too, to watch, the buyer lines and you know, keep an eye out for, you know, potential new names. This and Saratoga, you know, for the yearling sale, you get, you know, incursions into the marketplace at these kinds of sales. And there'll be a name and might be either an anonymous, you know, somebody signed for it's for a new client. We're always eager to find, you know, who those new clients might be.
We'll find them. They can't hide from us for long.
No, exactly. You'll hunt them down in
You're
the
putting
aisles.
Them on notice. I'm out for them.
touch on a few others. I'm just looking at some dams and, the Life at 10's name jumps out at me. She's got her 2-year-old this year is a filly by Go Sapper that Hobie Kite is offering. Who else the catalog did not arrive. And I don't know if I forgot to send in the card or what, but usually I've got the book to kind of go through and make my notes. I don't have it here.
You've got to get on the phone to Boyd Browning and complain about that.
it's my fault. They send those postcards, and you got to send the postcard back.
So. Well, no, Steve, it's never your fault. You're never supposed to say it's your fault. Well, I did mention that the have to always dreaming the Derby winner is with Niall Brennan. He's by Curl, or she's rather by Curlin. So that's a big the mare to be watching for. So I think that would be the one pedigree thing that really stood out. There's also a half to savings account, a Connect Colt.
Well, just as I breeze through here and look for some other high profile mares. Jay Quirk, Hip 141, the Quality Road, Leap Akoi. It's one of his brood mares. And I think that there's something to her, right? There's a sibling.
Certainly there. And Niall Brennan also has a full brother to Sweet Loretta, the spinaway winner.
Well, and then, of course, you know, one part of this, and I guess I'll wait till tomorrow morning when TDN publishes the Pinhook Guide, which has become really a fun for me. I'd love it. I'd love to, you know, print it out and then, you know, see who scored out. What's notable about this sale, there's some very... Typically, there's some very big prices that have been paid for some of the yearlings, and so, you know, they're going to need to fetch high six figures to make it worthwhile. It's not as you know, sexy as the $50,000 yearling that sells for $500 or $1 million. Those are the best stories, but that's, you know, the Pinhook side of things after, you know, what was a very difficult year last year, Jessica. I mean, has there been much conversation about the economic viability and stability of the Pinhook community?
You know, it sounded like a lot of the Pinhookers felt that the yearling market was very tough last year. They were finding a lot of competition from end users, and it was very tough for them to buy the horses that they wanted to buy. So, you know, people were saying, oh, maybe it's going to be a soft market because of the pandemic, but I don't think that's what the Pinhookers found. And so people now saying, oh, this coming yearling sale season is going to be even stronger, I think that has them a little bit worried because they found it difficult to buy last year. If you're saying it's going to be tougher to buy next year, that's going to be a problem for them.
Well, we'll certainly look forward tomorrow 2:00. And are you working the sale alone, or you got
Christy flying down as we speak?
So you did the advance work. You were the advance party.
Advance count. That's me.
Jessica Martini, everybody, and as we say, it's never too early for a martini. When it's Jessica
Thanks,
Martini.
Steve.
Thanks a lot. Always great. And we'll watch for Jess's reportage today. I'm sure she'll be working the barns and keeping track of what's going on with everybody. And we'll also get some insights from Todd Pletcher too, and see what Todd was impressed with. You can follow Jess, of course, on Twitter, Jess Martini. TDN. Jess Martini, TDN. Let's do this. We'll take a break. I got to flip-flop two visitors. Case, let's break here, and we're going to talk to Ron Fischow. And Ron is really a nice story. Speaking of Todd Pletcher, right? He was a Pletcher assistant. But Ron wins his first training title at Fairgrounds, and want to give him some proper spotlight opportunity. Talk about his career and sending out more winners than some of the more high-profile outfits. Ron Fischow is going to join us later, I think around 10:30. Mark Frostad. And I actually had wanted to get Mark when news came that Sam Sun was going to wind down their operation. I'll have to broach that, reached out to Mark to pay tribute to Todd Cabell, and really, yesterday, obviously, with Al Stahl talking about Larry Melanson, Cabell had a terrific career. I mean, 4,000 wins, 3,800 or something, two Queen's plates, six-time Sovereign Award winner. Very, very sad. And a lot of success in the red and yellow of Sam's son. So Mark Frostad later this morning. Andy Serling as well. And more. Stay with us at the races. Back after this, Ron Fischel.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
There's a great story to tell in Pennsylvania. Only three states have produced more Breeders' Cup champions, and no state can match our performance in recent years. Since 2016, our numbers of mares bred has skyrocketed, unlike the national trend. And this year's live foal report shows Pennsylvania up over 50%. Why? Our incentives and bonuses are the best in North America. Please visit us at PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Listos.
Back to At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Golden brown, texture like sun, lays me down in my mind. She runs throughout the night, no need to fight, never a frown with golden brown.
We're back at the races, about 10 minutes to the top of the hour. And just delighted to look at the final trainer standings at Fairgrounds. And, you know, you got your Coxes and your Asmussens and your Amoses and so forth. But none of them got a winner's circle ceremony to be recognized as the leading trainer at Fairgrounds this 2021 season. It goes to Ron Fischel, and it is a real delight, Ron. People loved the fact that that you came out on top this winter. Congratulations.
Oh, I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
You know, there's a lot of things that have to come together. You can come to a meet with a certain number of horses and think, you know, kind of know what the condition book looks like and hope, you know, you're going to run well. But, you know, talk about what it takes to win 40 races over the winter.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we've been coming to Fairgrounds consistently for the last 10 years. And we come with a lot of Louisiana breds. You know, we stay in Louisiana year-round. And I think it gives us, you know, somewhat of an advantage as far as, you know, we have a lot of places to run, a lot of different horses. I mean, we have horses for all different categories, you know, from stake horses to 5,000 claimers, Louisiana bred, open bred horses. And it's just, you know, we're very familiar with this condition book here. Like I said, we've been here a long time. And, you know, it's, you know, this is our track, you know, that's in our own backyard. You know, I'm from New Orleans and coming to this racetrack since I was a kid. And, you know, there's nothing like winning races for us over here at Fairgrounds. So.
Yeah, you know, it's got to be, you know, it's got to feel good to, you know, to turn away, you know, the those kinds of names that, you know, that I mentioned. And, you know, it's funny because sometimes at a meet, you know, especially a seasonal meet like this, there's outfits that'll come out and they'll win, you know, in the first third of the meet. And then, you know, once they've hit some conditions, then, you know, then it's a little tougher, the next portion. Then there's some that, you know, had a, you know, number of wins before they got there. And so they're not gonna, you know, hit their best stride until mid point in the meet or later. But you seemed after, you know, what, took about a week or 10 days, at the beginning of the meet, I think, and then you really got rolling.
Yes, sir. Actually, we started off kind of slow. I want to say maybe two for our first 20 or 25 or something. But, yeah, like you said, I mean, we just we got rolling after that and just didn't look back. Just kept doing what we do, you know.
Talk about the, you know, getting to this point, and Todd's going to be on later, actually, and you worked for him. Talk about your background and getting on the racetrack, and what the motivations were from the get go.
Okay, sure, yeah. I worked for Todd for probably about 2.5 years. Great learning experience for myself. You know, I before Todd, I worked for Billy Badgett, who's actually now at Gulfstream.
Sure, look at you.
But he connected me with Todd, and you know, that was two great horsemen to learn from at an early age. It really was. I mean, I learned so much in Todd's program. You know, you learn so much about, like I say, the organization is key in a huge program like that. You know, and I mean, we're about a 50 horse stable, I use the things that I learned in Todd's program every day, you know, and you know, I've worked for a lot of great horsemen, Steve Placeris, you know, I've just been around a lot of horsemen, really good, talented horsemen, even horsemen that I didn't even work for, but just friends of mine, you know, Wayne Catalano, all these guys that just kind of, you know, they take you under their wing. You know, they see you as a, you know, younger, up and coming trainer, and they want to help. You know, and you know, we just we're fortunate to learn from a lot of really good horsemen. You know, and you know, I decided that I wanted to stay in Louisiana year round. I have children here, and if I can do what I want to do and do it in Louisiana year round, I mean, there's nothing better than that. So. You know, we're very happy. I mean, this is exactly where we want to be right now. So,
I love it. What got you on the racetrack? How'd you get interested?
I just I transferred high schools from my sophomore to junior year, and I couldn't play sports, and I just started going to the racetrack every day, and I just loved it. I mean, I loved it. I've been around it. My stepfather Lou Roussel is a trainer, obviously. But I just, you know, it just, you know how it is. I mean, when it grabs you. I always knew I wanted to do something with it, and you know, it's just special, especially Fairgrounds for us, you know. So,
And you're late 30s?
Yes, sir. Yep, 38.
How about that? And you've been on your own. It's got to be 10. Well, it looks like 10 years.
Yes, sir. Yeah, been about 10 years. Yep.
Well, you know, to get to this point, a lot of things, obviously a lot of things have to happen. Talk about the client base and you know, how you wade into that side of things and draw, you know, draw clients.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we are so fortunate. We have some great owners down here in Louisiana. You know, and I mean, the program in Louisiana is so good. I mean, I have owners from all over the country that have gotten involved in it, you know. But that's, you know, like you say, I mean, that's a huge part of this business, having the right and good owners. The owners we have, I mean, I wouldn't trade them for any owners in the country, I promise. I mean, they're great. They're great, you know, and a lot of them are almost friends first type owners.
Yep.
You know, I mean, it's just a privilege to work with them every day, you know.
I just got a funny text. Another Louisiana native wants to know where you went to high school.
I went to De La Salle High School.
De La Salle. There we go. All right.
Yes, sir.
Well, there's that. I don't have to tell you. There's an enormous Louisiana community out there that's representing in the industry. You know, I knew when I thought to reach out to you that we hadn't talked in a while, but I think Gantry, after Gantry won the Smile years ago, I think I was trying to place where you'd been on before, and I think that's how far back it goes.
Yes, sir. I mean, it's hard to believe that was 2012, you know. Yeah, that was special. I mean, I was just starting out training. I mean, to have a huge horse like that, Gantry, right when you started, I really got lucky. He's still such a special part of our program. You know, he was our pony here for a while, and he's turned out at one of my owner's farms, and we get to go see him whenever we want. He's doing great still, so.
That's terrific. And it makes me think whenever you get a gelding type, that's special, having them close by Trombetta's got Sweet Northern Saint in his backyard close by at a woman's farm. I think Scott Lake has got Spooky Mulder close by. It's not like a dog that you can maybe have two or three dogs. You can't have an unlimited amount of your stable stars, taking up the household.
right.
Pretty funny. Here's his record. He won 850,000 and 11-time winner, Gantry.
Yep.
And just looking here, he's he's only 14. He's only 14.
Right. Yeah.
He's got a ways to go. And that was Britt Lynn. Let's hit a few highlights and talk about some of the kinds of horses and stock acquisition and the approach that you're taking. You know, Monty Mann obviously has been a terrific success story of late.
Yes, sir, he has. We claimed him for $25,000, and right off the claim, he won 7 races in a row, and 5 of them were stakes. He's really just been, in the money pretty much almost every time we've run him. I mean, he's so consistent, and, he's getting older himself, but he's still got it. Sometimes his form will dip slightly a little bit. But, for an older gelding, I mean, he's so, he's 100% sound. He's so easy to train. We're very fortunate. He's such a cool horse. So, Monty Man, before him, our big horse was Sunbeam, who, he earned quite a bit, I think close to like $1.2 million. I was training with Britland Stable. We've had some good horses along the way. A lot of good Louisiana bred. So,
well, the program. You mentioned the strength of the program and the opportunity. Particularly for a tweener, you got a horse that might be you know, just a cut below, you know, graded steak type quality, and you can try, you know, you can try them in those settings, but you know, to be able to, you know, feast on, you know, on the Louisiana premier programs and the champions nights and, you know, all the things that between Louisiana Downs and Delta and you know, certainly the fairgrounds, you know, they mix in a strong Louisiana bread side of things, but you know, it's you know, it's certainly Denton and Bossier City that you really, like you say, you know, staying year round. And Ron, I mean, if a big horse comes along, you can ship, obviously. You can go wherever the opportunity calls.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, Louisiana, it's special. It's, you know, we're the only state that has four major racetracks. And, you know, Louisiana racing is on the up and up right now, I promise. I mean, you know, we have so much going on down here, and I can tell you, I mean, this is going to be the place you want to be to if you own a racehorse eventually. I mean, it's going to be, you know, we're going to have well-rounded money, you know, money well-rounded year-round, I believe, and that'll be soon. And, you know, it's, you know, like for us, I mean, we can stable here year-round, and Lone Star is always an option to run over the summer. But yes, like you said, we're capable of, you know, I have two great assistants. I mean, we're capable of running anywhere we need to, you know, but we love being here in Louisiana. And, you know, we train over a lot of really good racing surfaces. And that's a big key. You know, we're big on that. We're big on keeping our horses sound, you know, and, you know, look, fairgrounds, I mean, you're not going to find a better surface in the country than here. You know, Louisiana Downs, you're not going to find a better surface to train on in there. I mean, so, you know, that's key. That's key too, I think, you know, so.
You mentioned four. I was remiss. I mentioned Louisiana Downs and Delta, but I didn't, that wasn't nice. I didn't include Evangeline. Got to give them some credit as well. And you know, that's an interesting point. When you mention the different surfaces, because I mean, certainly a Delta with the sand, the Sabine sand, as they call it, from the river, the silt, that's a very different surface. And, you know, not going to be able to do it anymore, but there used to be that sort of, express between Calder and Delta. And that if your horse was able to run well at either place, you could go, you know, you could go over. David Fox took advantage of that, and to some degree, I suppose you did. You know, going with Gantry to Calder, you know, having that same kind of, you know, soft main track that not every horse takes to.
Yeah, I mean, for a while there, I can recall quite a few Calder horses coming over and winning the big, you know, Delta Mile, Delta Princess, the big races.
Yep.
Over there.
Yeah.
But yeah, like you said, I mean, that's two comparable surfaces. Like with Gantry, we were training at the old Evangeline Downs, you know, it's a training center. And I mean, that was a phenomenal surface. I mean, it had been there for since the 60s. The foundation was unbelievable. But again, it was, I think it was used with that river sand, and it's comparable to when we did ship Gantry from there to Calder, you know. And no, I mean, that's a good point, you know.
And you can, you know, you can make your adjustments as you learn about the horse too. And when you've got a circuit, you know, when you've got a year-round circuit like that, well, it. Obviously, you know, you win a training title, and it gets you some, you know, some attention. And how many horses do you have under your care?
Presently, we have about 50 to 55. You know, it's kind of fluctuated between that number. We do a lot more claiming when we get to fairgrounds. We don't really claim that much over the summer, but when we get here, we claim a lot. So that's why I say fluctuates, you know, but we have about 52, 53 horses presently.
Nice.
But, and, you know, and we have our babies, so start to come in soon. So,
What's your preferred when it comes to the 2 year olds? What's your go to avenue for acquisition? You like buying yearlings with clients, or you go to the 2 year old sales?
Yeah, I do. I like buying yearlings. 2 year old sale, I like as well. I almost prefer to buy yearlings, but here in Louisiana, we have a lot of breeders that like to run their own horses. So I would say the majority of the horses I get are from that avenue.
Nice. And on the claiming side, it occurs to me, got a second to talk about the process and the evaluation and the kinds of things that, you know, that you do, the, you know, the process of going over a horse that you claim. Explain to everybody what, you know, how you, first of all, how you make your decisions. And, you know, do you look at, you know, are you a sheet user, for instance? Do you use Thoroughgraph or Ragazin and pick out claims? And then, you know, once you get them into the barn, how do you go over them and make adjustments?
Yeah, I usually just go by DRF, and then from there, if I like a horse to claim, watch replays, and I'll get the sheet of the rag numbers. I was kind of forced into learning how to claim early. You know, I think it's very important when you start as a trainer, you need to claim horses. I mean, you can't ever be stagnant in this business. You need to keep, you know, keep moving. But, yeah, when I first started training, I trained several horses for Frank Calabrese. And honestly, I mean, I learned from his racing manager, Steve Leving, who had been there for years. And he taught me so much about how to claim horses, you know. And I still use that every time I look at horses to claim. I mean, he really put me on the right path as far as that goes. But, yeah, I think it's a... You know, I think it's something that we're good at. You know, I think it's, you know, something that, you know, we can find little, you know, find certain, you know, especially fairgrounds. I mean, like I said, I know this condition book, you know, so well. I can sometimes you can see horses running in the wrong races that need to run in opposite, you know, in other races. I think that's a big part of it too, you know.
Among the horsemen you worked with, obviously you pick up certain things from certain people. When it came to, you know, to claiming horses, and maybe Catman, you mentioned Wayne, there's got to be little things that everybody, you know, that contribute to your understanding. And when you're watching a horse and, you know, making, you know, make, trying to improve them, essentially, what's your favorite go-tos to, you know, to try to get better performance out of a horse?
I mean, I think it just depends, you know, the horses, you know, they're individuals and you just have to figure out what they need, you know. I mean, you just, you know, I think you claim horses and certain horses, might be overtrained. You might need to back off of these horses. You know, you might need to just kind of freshen them up and make them happy again, you know? And, you know, certain horses are undertrained. You might need to train on them a little bit more. So it's just knowing the horse that you're getting, really, I think, more than anything, you know? And, hopefully they excel in your program, you know? I mean, you know, that's a big key as well.
From nose to tail, though, the things like, you know, checking teeth and working on feet and, you know, checking for, you know, for any health deficiencies and, you know, all the little, you know, the little things that sometimes get missed just because of, you know, sometimes one barn, you know, doesn't, you know, there's an area that they're not as careful about, that they don't notice, as much, you know, what, When you've unlocked the key to a horse along the way, what has been something that you're real proud of that you figured out about a horse that was holding him back?
Yeah, I mean, like you said, you just have to check all the boxes. You know, you have to make sure everything's right with them. You you know, we have, you know, a really, we have really good, I have really good assistants. We have really good help. We're at my barn here. And, you know, I think mainly you just, you want a horse, you want to feed the best feed you can feed. You know, you want to do right by the horse. You do everything right by the horse. And, you know, it's going to be to your benefit. I promise. So that's the main thing. You just, you know what to do and you do everything right by the horse.
Well, that can't ask for more, you know, that's a formula in itself, right? Do the best we can to you know, take care of him. How about help on that? That's a separate topic, and I know you're involved with the Louisiana HBPA, and you know, this is a topic that has been, you know, so difficult for everybody. But is help readily available in Louisiana, and obviously the fact that you stay in state and work that circuit, that plays to your advantage as opposed to being one of these outfits that, you know, winters in New Orleans, then goes back to Kentucky, or, you know, whatever set of racetracks that you go. I mean, when you have to move with people, it's a little harder. So I suppose staying in Louisiana year round makes that a little bit more stable for your people.
Yes, sir. I mean, we have some very good help. I'm fortunate to have two assistants that want to be here year round, just like I do. And you know, our grooms and hot walkers have been here for years. Usually, we may lose one or two once we go from the summer racing to fairgrounds. Just being that, you know, a lot of trainers at fairgrounds get a lot more day money than I do. You would think being from, you know, staying in Louisiana year round, you know, and these other, some of these other trainers coming from Kentucky and New York. But, you know, that's probably pretty much the only time a year that maybe we'll, you know, it becomes a little difficult for us, but, you know, I mean, we like you said, I mean, we are fortunate to train in a circuit here year round, and I mean that does help us as far as keeping help, and we keep more than enough help if need be, you know. So
sure,
we're fortunate there.
What before we go, Ron Fichot is with us, just fresh off the training title at Fairgrounds, first for him, and what are some goals, Ron, that you keep, you know, maybe you keep them to yourself, but what are some of the things that, that you know, you'd like to see happen or you'd like to achieve going forward?
You know, this was a huge goal. I'm not going to lie. I mean, this was a huge one. This is something that we've always dreamt about doing, you know, leading trainer at Fairgrounds. I don't know, maybe repeat. We'll see. I don't know. But I mean, I want to stay here year round. Eventually we may go outside the state a bit, you know, we'll see what happens, you know, but for now we're very happy and doing what we're doing. You know, we love it.
Well, terrific. What about family?
I have two beautiful children, Porter and Bryce. No, they're my world. They mean everything to us, you know, to me. They're really special. So, over the summer, I get to spend a lot more time with them. Fairgrounds, it's more of a grind, and they live in Lafayette. So, I look forward to getting over there. So
nice. How old are they?
Seven. My son is seven and my daughter just turned 13.
Wow. Wow. Yep. All right. So you started fairly young. That's good.
Yes, sir.
Do they like the track? Do they like coming to the barn?
They do. My son likes it more. He's the one that's seven. He likes it. I don't know how close I want him to get to the track, but no, I mean, it's, I like it. It's a good, you know, look, I mean, the racetrack, I mean, you meet people from from all areas of life. You know, I mean, you may be talking to a billionaire one second and, you know, somebody that doesn't know where they're going to get their next meal the next, you know. And I think that's a really good learning experience for children, you know. So they like, you know, like I said, my son likes coming out there. So we'll see. You know, he might have a summer job when he gets a little older.
Well, that's how you started, a summer at Saratoga, and here you are, you know, whatever, 20 years later, give or take, and a training title on the mantelpiece. Ron Fischot, congratulations, continued success.
Thank you so much, Steve. And I hate to do this to you, but I got to. It's Fauché is the pronunciation.
I'm sorry, because, you know, I think my 10 years in Quebec, it throws me off because, I see the Quebecois, you know, spellings, and I'll lean to that. So I love it, Fauché, and we won't mispronounce again. Ron, great job, and we'll be looking forward to talking again soon.
Yes, sir. Thank you so much for having me.
I appreciate it, Ron Fauché, everybody. And here's just 38, he said, and 12, 13 years training. And it's a milestone. It's a great milestone. So very nice. Do this. Let's take our second hour break, and we'll come back. We've got a visit coming up with Mark Frost at bottom of the hour, and it's not a pleasant topic, but the passing of Todd Kamal, and also I got to bring up with Mark the fact that Samsung is winding down their operation, and of course Mark's career so closely tied to Samsung Farm. We'll talk to him in a few minutes. I've got some results from the weekend we haven't gotten to yet. Andy Serling ahead, Todd Pletcher as well. Back after this at the races.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
HorseBills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through HorseBills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the HorseBills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. HorseBills.com. Toll-free number 888-9 384643.
There's a great story to tell in Pennsylvania. Only 3 states have produced more Breeders' Cup champions, and no state can match our performance in recent years. Since 2016, our numbers of mares bred has skyrocketed, unlike the national trend. And this year's live foal report shows Pennsylvania up over 50%. Why? Our incentives and bonuses are the best in North America. Please visit us at PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Sirius XM Sports presents At the Races with Steve.